This podcast is sponsored by El Spelio, makers of some of the greatest caving lights on the entire planet. Their top-of-the-line light is a light called the Lunatic. And for the last couple months, I've been saying that I'm going to give my Lunatic to somebody to use on some serious caving trips because they'll be able to take it places I can't because I don't go caving nearly often enough to justify owning this thing. So I am pleased to announce that the first recipient of the El Spelio Lunatic to try out is Lane Roberts, who is a guide at Caverns of Sonora in Texas. And I got a chance to talk with Lane recently. What makes you want to go down to Mexico then?
I met Bill Steele.
Yeah.
And it was so wonderful because right after meeting him and talking to him about some of the caves he was doing here, and I was already planning to go to High Quad's Restoration Project. I'm doing that at the end of this month. I wanted to do our wild cave tour in Caverns of Sonora. Nobody's doing it. A lot of our tours have gotten suspended for COVID and just never picked back up.
So you're like on your way to getting into it.
Yeah, and it's mostly because I've had this podcast, so I've like known the steps. And when I met Bill Steele, he came into the gift shop and my boss called me over. It's like, she wants to get into caving. And so he's talking to me and I go home and immediately go search your podcast to see if there's an interview. Not only was there an interview, there was a recent interview. So I knew exactly when to email him about getting on his projects for the next year.
Well, now you'll have a good light to take you there. What kind of light are you using right now?
I mean, like a Husky hardware store headlamp.
Right on. Okay. Yeah, that's where a lot of people start, that kind of thing. You promised to let me know how it goes and maybe take some pictures and...
Absolutely, I'll take some pictures.
All right. Well, Lane, I can't wait to see where you take it. And best of luck, and we'll get it out to you soon.
Oh, thank you so much.
And, of course, this is going to be an ongoing thing. So if you are interested in borrowing my Lunatic once I get it back from Lane, send me an email, alpineproductions@gmail.com. As long as you can take some photos, let me know how it was. That's kind of the whole deal. alpineproductions@gmail.com. That's my personal email address. Or if you just want to buy one yourself, go to elspelio.com and enter the promo code podcast to save $20 on any light or any regular priced order over $300 and treat yourself to a heavy duty serious caver's light in an El Spelio. elspelio.com, promo code podcast, and I'll put a link in the description. Welcome to the Caving Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Pelser of the Central Indiana Grotto. What's a grotto? Grotto is a local chapter of the National Speleological Society. If you're here listening to this podcast for the first time, welcome. If you've been caving for a while and this is your first time listening to the podcast, well, welcome to you as well. If you've never gone caving, it's just something you're curious about. Or if you think you've gone caving, did you do it the right way? See, we here in the caving community have a few protocols that we follow as far as safety goes. And the best way to find out what those protocols are is to get involved with your local grotto. And you can find your grotto through the National Speleological Society. I've posted a link in the description of this podcast. So get in touch with your local grotto and make friends. Caving can be dangerous if you don't know what you're doing. Quite the opposite if you do and if you go with people who do. And if you get experience that way, well, you'll be in the know and on the same tier as those people before you know it. So make sure you do it the right way. And welcome to one of the greatest adventures of your life. A quick calendar note, OTR canceled. The county had to retract the permit due to the Delta variant, screwing up all of our plans for the coming months. You know, look, science is science, facts are facts, and we don't need one more daggone thing dividing us in this country, okay? Let's come together on this and knock this thing out, get rid of it. We have the power, just too many of us aren't actually using it. And as a result, this is the kind of thing that happens. I'm going to step off the soapbox now. And this past month, at the beginning of the month, was My Grotto's annual event, Indiana Cave Capers. And I've done this before. I did this back in 2017 when I was about a year into the podcast and just kind of set up a microphone near registration and talked to people. That was back when I was chair of the Central Indiana Grotto. And this year, I'm really, really glad to have done it again. And I'm really, really pleased with how it turned out. They were kind of longer form interviews than I did at Cave Capers 2017. So these are 4 15-ish minute interviews, mostly with people that I know or at least know of. And we just kept it loose and had a great time. I will say, though, that this was all done on Friday night, and I'm going to give them to you in chronological order from the first to the last one that I did. And I don't want to trigger anyone with any kind of dependency issues, but I'm a pretty moderate drinker, but beers were consumed. We'll just say that. So it's, if it seems a little too loose by the time we get to the very end, that's why. But we all had a wonderful time. And I want to thank the Central Indiana Grotto. I want to thank Charlie and Rich for putting this whole thing together and everybody who had anything to do with it. It was just a great event this year. And if you were at the 2007 National Convention, this is where we did it. It was Crawford County Community Park. I think it doubles as the fairgrounds in Crawford County, Indiana. And a lot of great state caves around there. I led a trip in Langdon's Cave. We were supposed to go to Mock's Cave. We couldn't find it. I was with a who's who of Indiana caving, though. I had Sam Freshour with me, who I've had on the podcast before. Dave and Susie Strickland. Danny Chase. Danny's brother Dale's been on the podcast before. He passed away recently. And I ran into Danny at Gory Hole, which is Indiana's deepest pit, on Sunday. Hazel Barton, who did our presentation for Indiana Cave Capers, and we're so thankful that she came out and did that. She and I went and did Gory, just the two of us, on Sunday, and it was just a marvelous time. I did not think that I'd get to spend so much quality time with Hazel Barton at Indiana Cave Capers, but we did, and it was wonderful. We did Gory, and on the way, we stopped by Wesley Chapel Gulf, which is this huge, like, 8-acre sinkhole near the, it's part of the Lost River cave system in Indiana. And so that was fun. I talked with her a little bit on Friday night. We talked on Saturday. We did a thing on Saturday that I'm going to turn into a future episode of the podcast, and that's all I'll say about it right now. But Hazel, and I know you're a listener, I appreciated our time at Capers. Thank you very much. And thank you for calling me out on my less-than-perfect vertical technique. I was like trying to set a rope pad at Gory without having tied off, and she called me out on it right away, which needed to happen. I haven't done a lot of vertical in the last few years. So it's good when you got somebody like that watching over you in case you do something stupid like that. So anyway, thanks. All right, well, let's get into it. So the first interview you're going to hear was one that I was a little anxious to do. Someone had told me that Tony Akers was just hanging out over at his campsite, and he was there with another Indiana caver, Doug Hanka, who I should also interview for the podcast. And I was going to interview that weekend, but we never got around to it. And Tony and a lot of the guys from my grotto, they'll go to Mexico every year and look for caves. And he's been doing it for a long time. And well, you'll hear it. Let's just hear Tony Akers from Indiana Cave Capers 2021. Tony Akers, I think the question I'd want to ask you, since you've been at it for so long, is where do you get the feeling that you are chasing constantly? Like, if as a caver, where do you get that feeling that keeps you coming back? Is it at the end of the push? Is it, you know, what? What would you say it is?
I think it'd be, I don't know, it's just looking for a new cave. Yeah. So you're constantly looking for a new cave. And for me, it's always been, you know, not necessarily the deepest or the biggest cave, but just finding an unexplored area.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what excites me about it. And that's what pushes me to cave, you know. Yeah, I started caving when I was really young, and I learned at a really young age that, you know, caving was really the last unexplored frontier on Earth unless you could afford a submarine or something, go to the bottom of the ocean, right? I mean, it's really not practical. So, you know, doing vertical work when I was a kid, like I did Fantastic Pit when I was, you know, 16.
Are you kidding me? 16 when you did Fantastic? Yeah.
So I was.
What had you done before that, like leading up to that?
I did Surprise Pit, actually, when I was a little younger than that, the original drop in Surprise. And it was like in cotton coveralls.
Cave, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Cotton coveralls, carbide lamp, you know, just a kid. It was all on knots. You know, it was back when we used Prusik knots.
How long did that take to climb on knots?
Yeah, when I was young, it was probably not that long, maybe 45 minutes, an hour, you know, today it'd take a lot longer, you know, on mechanical stuff. But, you know, so, I mean, it was kind of like after that, it was like, you know, what am I going to do? I was just a kid, you know, vertical caving was still pretty young and at that time, and, you know, I always had dreams of going to Mexico. You know, I finally was able to fulfill that dream later in life and have done a lot of trips to Mexico.
Yeah, and several
but
times.
It's just the constant, you know, exploration, original exploration, you know, and I think it carries over into a lot of aspects of my whole entire life, really. You know, my business, I mean, we import Mexican pottery for a living. I mean,
yeah.
It was kind of something that we, you know, Marion and I kind of come up with and thought of. And
Carlota Gardens.
You know, yeah, and we, you know, we went for it. I mean, you know, Marion has a chemistry degree. She left a good job to do that, you know, and I worked at Honda. I mean, you know, manufacturing, which we both worked there, and we just kind of went off on this whole different trajectory that we're going to do this no matter what, and we took our son along with us. So, I mean, in that sense, it's all about exploration, and that's what we did in Mexico, too. We kind of explored art, Mexican art, like we did caves. I mean, we just, like, were really methodical about it, read a lot of books, drove to places, met artists, and figured out what we could bring back and sell. You know, in the caving world, it was the same kind of way of, you know, in the sense of, you know, you're out, you know, looking for new caves. You know, in Indiana, a lot of digging going on. You know, caves are harder to find now today than they were then, but, you know, that yet, you know, you're finding some of the biggest caves in the world now because of that.
I see you as a cultural ambassador for that area in Mexico, down in Oaxaca.
No, thanks.
And what would you say to somebody who doesn't know anything about that culture or about those people down there?
Yeah, I mean, I think today, as far as even, you know, south of our border, there's a lot of misconceptions.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm, you know, fortunately for me, I met a man in 1994. His name was Waldo Garcia. And, you know, my life was, I wouldn't say it was in shambles, but I was kind of disoriented in what direction I was heading, divorced with kids. And, you know, and he kind of took me under his wing and became somebody that was, you know, like my dad. You know, and this guy, it's just been a really, you know, wonderful story that we've had together, you know, and how, you know, they adopted me into the family. And, you know, it was, you know, I get a text from his daughter every day without fail, every day.
Really? Even to this day.
Even to this day.
That's great.
This morning, you know, so to have that kind of relationship. And when we both met, I mean, it was like, you know, I couldn't speak Spanish, he couldn't speak English. And it just became this long-term thing where I kept going back and going back.
What would you say your proficiency is now?
I'm pretty good at Spanish. I mean, I do business in Mexico, so
yeah.
You know, you gotta be able to speak Spanish. I mean, I'm
would you use the word fluent?
Oh yeah I think I would.
Good.
Yeah, I think I would, but you know, there's always a lot to learn with languages, you know. I mean, in some areas I'm really fluent, like on the business side, because I do business, I'm pretty fluent.
Yeah,
you know, in the Sierra Mazateca I'm pretty fluent, but you know, in like Mexico City, talking with the guys on the street, I don't even know what they're saying.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, it's like just more of a street talk, and you know, it's faster, it's different. Yeah, it's just hard for me to understand. But, you know, so, yeah, I mean, you know, with the Mazatec area, I mean, it's full of a lot of superstition and mystery and caves and magic mushrooms. And, you know, that's the interesting part of it, too, is really having an understanding of, you know, how the people there look at the caves culturally.
Yeah.
I mean, it's where they believe, you know.
Well, it's something, I don't know if I'd call it an obstacle, but it's definitely something you've got to take into consideration whenever you're in the area and negotiating your way into these certain places.
Yeah. I mean, it's a dangerous place to go caving, you know, and especially the areas that we're going to. I mean, you know, we've been ran out of the jungle by armed groups of men, and, you know, and our son Simon has a kid involved in that. I mean, it's, you know, at the time it's kind of scary, but in the end,
that's some big life stuff.
Yeah. It's some, you know, it's a pretty big life story for a little kid, you know. In fact, I was putting together a presentation recently, and you know, a lot of the show was of Simon when he was little with us, and all of a sudden I realized it really isn't my show at all, it's his show. You know what I mean? It's like a little kid, we drug him to all these places. But yeah, the people there are wonderful in the Sierra Mazateca and Oaxaca, you know, and I'm fortunate enough to do, you know, business in other indigenous cultures in Oaxaca too, and they're just great people. I mean, they have nothing, they're poor, you know, but they're so humble and, you know,
helpful too.
Yeah, super helpful. And then you get your, you know, factions that, you know, they'll kill you. You know,
well,
there's people out there that will take your life. You know, we know that for sure. And you know, you got to be careful. You know, it's like I was talking to Doug earlier. It's all calculated risk, and those are all calculations you got to make. Is it going to be safe to go here with this guy?
Right.
You know,
is he the right guy?
Is he the right guy? You know, because you know, we've been in that situation where sometimes you got to have somebody with a little bit of backbone, a little bit of connection. You
can
know,
talk your way in or out of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. To talk your way in and out of stuff. You know, so it's been a...
There's a lot of potential still down in that area, though, as far as the caves and everything go. I mean, what do you expect to find, or what do you hope to find whenever you go down?
That's changed a lot over the years. I mean, when we were first going, we were doing expeditions up in the mountains and setting remote base camps. I mean, we were setting a base camp up for 10 days, and we were doing pits that we would chop for 3 days away from camp. And that's where we'd locate a big, you know, open pit in the middle of the jungle. Mm. And, Breath of Bows Total, we did that pit. I think it was in, 1998, 1999, that winter right there. And we were the only ones that ever been there still today. I mean, it's just so remote. And we've tried to get back there again because there's a good lead in there. But, we ran out. So, and then over the years, then I became, closer to the family. So I live on a coffee plantation. We live on a coffee plantation in Mexico. I mean, it was the second biggest coffee plantation in Oaxaca, and that was Waldo Garcia, who I met, which I had no idea at the time that he had this place, and it was somewhat abandoned, and he just kind of, let us stay there. Mm. So that was part of the story of how my life went from that to then it went to more of culturally having a lot of close people I could really consider family.
Mm.
And then over the years, we just kept doing our expeditions in the mountains. That's something we've always done. I don't know, I'm probably up to 17 or 18 different expeditions where we go up to the mountains and set a base camp, chop it out of the jungle and set tarps up, collect rainwater and go look for big caves, And we find lots of big pits, and we've never found a deep system, but, I think right now we're around 17,000 feet of virgin vertical survey. So, it's a lot of different pits, but that's a lot of vertical depth that we've documented.
Yeah.
And, when you're talking about big jungle pits, it's dangerous, stuff's loose. Boulders fall. It's some really, technical and complex rigging. Mm. And I think that's kind of, what our forte is really, is being able to rig in those kind of environments. And then coming back to base camp is, a camp in the jungle. And, there's all kinds of things that can happen. We had a hurricane go through 1 year and blew down many trees all around our camp. It's just a dangerous environment. But then the locals would say, well, that's because we're not supposed to be there. And after a certain amount of time, because of things that happens over time, you tend to wonder, is it that? Is this really why? We shouldn't be up there?
Yeah.
That kind of thinking goes on for sure. Yeah. There's a lot of crazy stuff that happens, now I think definitely going to always be going there. It's part of my life. We got some things that we're wanting to try to set up with some of the Mexican cavers down there. And
is it a tight knit group? Do you welcome new people, or do you have kind of your core group? And it's cool if it's the latter answer, because that's a way a lot of the Mexican stuff happens.
Yeah, I think, it basically, the whole thing started out of the CIG. It was Joe Oliphant, Danny Diable, Greg
Central
McNair,
Indiana Grotto,
And, that was where the group was formed out of, and that's where it's always been out of. Hmm. So, of course, anybody, mostly Ron does a lot of trips, Greg's done a lot of trips, Marion, Rand, Thomas Hawkins, who lives in Pennsylvania, he's a botanist.
Hmm.
So he goes with us and is able to identify plants for us. And, we have some people that come and go. But, we're a pretty tight-knit group. The core of the group's caved together a long time.
Hmm.
We've tested each other underground and been there for each other underground. So, that's
what it's all about.
So, as far as outsiders coming in, the caving environment has changed in Sierra Mazateca so much. It's a dangerous place,
Yeah.
I think the cartel probably started coming in there about 5 or 6 years ago.
Any new person is a potential liability.
Yeah, for sure. And, I think like with anything, once you get to a certain level, you want to have people around you that are at that level or understand what's going on. And that's not necessarily talking about the caving world. That's talking about culturally down there, how to handle yourself, when to sit down, when to shut up, when to, drink, when not to drink. There's a lot of cultural subtleties in the Sierra Mazateca, it's just a difficult place to cave right now. The influence of the cartel is pretty bad right there right now. It's calmed down a lot within the last 2 years, and it seems like it's on the mend and getting better. And COVID has been a big problem.
Yeah, you know, I bet.
I mean, I didn't even go there this year. I mean, it was like I called my family there. You know, I was crying. You know, I wanted to go. It's the first time I haven't been in probably 20 years, you know. And they were all upset, too. But it was just like, look, I don't want to run the risk of bringing something there. And I don't want to be accused of bringing something there.
Right.
Even if I don't, you know. Yeah. So it was the first year in a long time. And, you know, my plan is to go back next year for sure. And I'm in constant contact with them, you know. So that's all good. But as far as the cave-in goes, you know, I mean, we're just going to keep doing what we're doing. There's lots of unexplored caves in the region, you know, of all different types, vertical, horizontal, big caves. Actually, probably one of the biggest open-air pits in Mexico is in the Sierra Mazateca. And we tried to get there, but the locals feel that it's sacred and they won't let you there, you know, and that's just unfortunate.
Just got to massage that for a few more
years.
Yeah,
you know, we got to wait for the right time. You know, once I get turned down, I don't push myself. I just wait. And then, you know, I'll run into somebody like, oh, well, yeah, I know this guy. You should come there. You know, or maybe they have a cave on their property. You know, I mean, it's private property is one way you can go caving there. You know, it's best to always have, you know, permission from the local authorities. But that can swing. There's an election every, you know, 3 to 4 years, depending on what area. And, you know, if the president in the first year says no, chances are he's going to say no the whole time.
Yeah.
So a lot of times you have to wait till the next term of a new president and go in and talk to them and, you know, just explain to them what you're doing. And things change over time there. It's really dynamic. So, you know, what can be the case, you know, 4 years previous is totally different than it was then, not only because of the president, because of things that's happened in the community. You know, so, but COVID was a big battle this year and wasn't able to go. And, you know, I've lost a number of friends there, you know, because of COVID.
Because of COVID. Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Well, actually, in the Sierra Mazateca is a really dangerous place. And it's kind of an interesting, you know, statistic that I've kept track of. You know, I've been going there since 94, but it was probably, I don't know, maybe 15 years ago. You know, I started counting how many people I knew that died personally every year.
Wow.
And it was an average of 4. So,
yeah.
I mean, like, how many people do you know that die in a year, right?
Yeah,
so we're talking about
many.
4, you know, for the last 15 years. And 2 years ago when I was there last because of the traffickers and the cartels, it was like 14 people died that I knew in 1 year. Okay. I mean, so it was, you know, it's pretty remarkable. I mean, pretty sad, actually, that, you know that many people personally that go down. But it's a dangerous place, you know. I mean, even the people that died, you know, every year, 4 people die every year. I mean, it's trees falling on them.
Illness, all kinds of stuff.
Drownings.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, it's just the endless amount of things that can happen to them there.
My gosh. All right. Well, Tony, thank you.
Yep.
Proyecto Sierra Mazateca leader, Indiana caver extraordinaire. Appreciate it.
Oh, thanks, man. I don't know if I'm extraordinaire, but
I'm saying it. I'm saying it. So it's true to me.
Okay.
It's true to me.
Good. Well, thank you.
Oh, man. Thank you, Tony. All right. Next up is Trey Hinkey. Now, he and I are going to talk about a number of things, but at the top here, and honestly, most of what we talked about was caving for reality television. Yeah. All right, here we go.
All right. So, Trey Hinkey.
Yes, sir.
What was the show you were on?
I was on Darkness.
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 Okay, now explain the premise of Darkness.
It was basically they take 3 people and put them in 3 locations, or 3 separate locations in a cave or a mine, and you've got 6 days to find each other, find your food, find your water, and find your exit, all without the use of any life source.
What, are you at liberty to say which cave you were in?
I believe so. Yeah.
Okay.
I was actually in, originally they were going to send me to the Yucatan. I got my passport. I'm all excited. I'm going to finally get to cave in the Yucatan. Lifelong dream. And instead, they put me in my hometown backyard. They put me in, I was in Hannibal in the Mark Twain cave system.
Okay, all right.
Wasn't in Mark Twain caverns. I was in...
you didn't find the Lost Boys, did you?
No. I
couldn't
was hoping
see
to find Injun Joe.
Okay. It's so funny you say that. I just read like an abridged Tom Sawyer and an abridged Huck Finn with my 4-year-old this past year. So it's just funny to hear you say that. But anyway, so you were there.
I was there. And I grew up in a Mark Twain kind of town.
I grew
up on the Mississippi River. So it was really kind of neat to be able to go back home again like that.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So what was it like for you?
Honestly, I took it as the greatest vacation of my life.
Okay.
They led me into this cave, and at first my eyes are beamed. My eyes couldn't be more wide open if I tried.
Because it's like, know? I'm going to be on TV. I'm going to get this new challenge of caving without a light, which had you done that before?
The only caving I'd done without a light, honestly, was on commercial cave tour routes.
Okay. So
now, when I worked at Laurel Caverns, I would go down and do restoration. We're removing a bunch of vandalism. And we were doing this during business hours. So when guests would come through, I would turn my lights off. I'd find a place to hide, and I'd scare the daylights out of them sometimes. But the ultimate goal was to not be seen. So we did get, me and my buddy, we got fairly good with moving around in the cave without lights then. And there was a couple of times where I traversed the entire length of the cave, 465 feet in elevation, back up to the surface.
Yeah.
In total darkness.
Yeah.
I have done it.
Yeah. Okay.
It's not something I brag about and not something I want to promote.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's not a good idea. It's not a good idea unless you're at a certain level. You know,
right.
That's what we always like to say. It's like, yeah, you don't do it alone. You don't do it. But there are some exceptions.
Yes.
But you got to be the right person. So anyway, so you're there and you're doing this and you've got a camera, but not really a camera crew following you around. How do they do it?
There was actually a camera crew with us at all times.
Okay.
Although we never heard them. I never knew they were around.
Really?
Me. The
never.
Only way that I knew that someone was around me was in the mornings when they had just taken a shower and it was shift change and I could smell that they smell clean.
But so, but they didn't come in using lights?
Also.
Did they have what? Did they have like infrared vision or something?
They did use night vision goggles. But from what I heard talking to the camera guys, it really created more of an obstacle than anything because with the night vision goggles, yeah, you can see that there's something in front of you. You can see that there's either a rock or a hole. There's really no depth.
Okay.
So, yeah, it added challenges for the crew, but they were extremely stealthy.
Yeah?
The only time that I knew that they were right there with me is when they would come to change out the batteries in my mic or in my my camera.
So the whole idea about this, around this, was create a show where you're trying to get to your resources and trying to get out as well.
Right.
And when I heard about it and I heard you were going to do it, I was super excited because it was like, oh man, an Indiana caver doing this, whatever it is. This could be really big. Has it aired?
Mine did not air in the United States. It did air in
Did any of the episodes air in the U.S.?
There were two episodes that aired in the U.S. In fact, my good friend, fellow survivalist, William Sherman, or Bill Sherman, he's also a caver out of West Virginia, his episode aired.
Okay.
So we were one of two episodes that aired. There's also another caver, Steph Petrie, I believe she's out of Virginia. Her episode aired, but it wasn't until a couple years later. But hers has aired maybe on another network or something. But
do you know where these aired in the U.S.?
I've been able to find them on... The first two episodes aired on Discovery Channel.
Okay, Discovery Channel.
They aired along with Shark Week and Naked and Afraid back in 2017.
Okay.
Now, Steph Petrie's, I've been able to find her episode on Discovery Plus.
Okay.
Aside from that, I found a couple of YouTube videos that are also in Portuguese from some other episodes.
Yeah, because yours aired in Brazil.
Mine did air in Brazil.
Yeah. Yeah, but yours was dubbed over in Portuguese.
All in Portuguese. Can't understand a word I'm saying.
So you've seen the whole thing?
I have.
You saw it. Okay. So, but you can you hear a little bit of you before the dub comes in?
No.
No, not at all. Bit?
Not at all. Which was a little disappointing in watching it, and I'm really not pleased about the edit. It didn't catch the whole story because, I mean, me and Sarah, we really worked well as a team. That was my partner. Brandon, he actually tapped out after 12 hours. He was the first one to ever tap out on the series.
12 hours. Not 12 even hours a half, in. Well, barely and a half day.
He even did Naked and Afraid and tapped out.
Well, I mean, that just goes to show you the hardcore nature of cave exploration, especially without a light. Okay,
absolutely.
So assuming nothing ever airs in the U.S., I mean, I got to get the end of the story, I guess. So how did it go for you?
Okay, so kind of give you the rundown of my challenge.
Yeah.
So first, I'm alone for I think it was like 3 days, And
alone in the dark.
I was like, alone in the dark. In fact, something fell in my ear at one point while I was alone in my own little room.
Like something alive?
No, I thought it was mud. And it wasn't until about 4 or 5 days later when I started losing my hearing that I got to thinking, that was a bat pooped in my ear.
No.
Pooped right in my ear.
Oh, my God. There's no way to know for sure, but it's got to be something
like
that. It's got
to be. How does that mud hang on the wall for millions of years or tens of thousands of years and just all of a sudden let go into my ear? It was a bat. Oh. It had to be.
Oh, God.
But so after about 3 days... I finally got to get up and move around and start trying to find some water. Well, production wanted me to... Yeah, we're going to go behind the scenes here a little bit.
Okay, so did they come and talk to you?
They did come
in the middle of those 3 days?
They wanted me to find some water.
Okay.
Well, I'm in a cave, and knowing the Binkley Cave system, which is what I'm most familiar with, mm-hmm. don't drink the water. Do not drink the water. Well, northern Missouri, you're still in a livestock-rich area.
Yeah, yeah, plenty E.
Don't
coli.
Drink the water. Well, little did I know, Kirsten Mudd, yeah. She was there. She was on site.
Missouri Bat Census.
Yes.
Yeah.
The one and only. And she had told the production crew that this water is perfectly safe to drink. But okay. They didn't tell me that.
Ah.
They told me it was safe to drink.
Why didn't they? If they wanted you to go find
water. I just didn't believe it
water.
Because yeah. It wasn't coming from a known source. Okay. So I refused to drink the water. They said, okay, well, then you gotta filter it through a sock. I said, I'm wearing wetsuit boots. I don't even have socks.
I don't want it.
So they gave me a sock. And I had to put it on my stinky, sweaty foot in my wetsuit boot. And I found some mason jars, some straw, and some charcoal. Apparently, this was used for moonshine.
So they're staging a hardship,
yes.
Essentially. All right.
So I've got all the ingredients to make a water filter. Yes, I filtered water. It's pure. It's clean. It tastes like my foot. Good
but
news.
That's good for a story, though,
good
right?
Good news. When I found my partner, I got to share my foot funk water with my partner.
Okay. So I ask again, why didn't this air in the U.S.? Because that's entertaining, right?
I would think so.
Right?
I would think so. I really don't have a good answer for that. I'm really disappointed. But if you go on Facebook and you look up this, we've got a petition going around on the Fans of Naked and Afraid fan page. It is going on, we've got a petition going to try to get Darkness re-aired.
Okay.
So please go on Fans of Naked and Afraid and XL Facebook page and look for that petition.
Okay.
Sign that petition. Let's get Darkness back on the air.
And you said two episodes have aired on Discovery Channel.
Yes.
One time each, or have they aired them a few times?
To the best of my knowledge, they both aired one time each.
Oh, man, yeah. Well, there's so much content out there, so much competition.
Yeah,
so
it really is.
It's going to be a long road, so if you can do that, that'd be great. Okay, so what projects are you working? You're still doing a bunch of caving in Indiana.
I was injured a couple of years ago, and my neck and shoulder have been undergoing lots of treatment for about a year and a half. And during that time off, away from caving, I just didn't trust myself. I didn't trust my body underground. So I started getting into primitive survival.
Okay, yeah.
And
you went out in the woods with, like, nothing, and I... And you went barefoot hiking as well.
Yes.
That's super cool.
I've done 10 miles so far at one time on adventure
10
hiking
10 miles
trail.
Barefoot?
Yep.
Wow.
Gotten real good with a bow drill, a hand drill. I can start friction fires. And you want to talk about rubbing two sticks together to get fire? I can do that. So I feel really good about
more.
That.
Yeah.
A little more. Building shelters, setting primitive traps and snares. And, you know, just getting back to my troglodyte lifestyle.
What about caving, though?
I've not really been doing a lot of caving. I'm trying to get back into it. I'm finally back into full strength and ready to rock and roll. So weekend, I'm actually leading a trip to the Binkley Mountain Room.
Oh,
will be my first trip to the Mountain Room since our rescue back in 2016.
Are you kidding me? You were part of that.
I was a part
of
that.
So I talked to Laura about that on the podcast, and that was harrowing. And she mentioned you.
It was pretty intense.
You were like the person who said, we got to get out of here.
Yes. Yep. I'd noticed the water coming up, and I was also the guy that found our camp. You know, I said, hey, you know, this up here might be a place to check out. You know, and so that's where we stayed for.
And you had the summer sausage.
I did. I had the Bridgeford Summer Sausage.
There's the name drop because they sent you a case of them, right?
Over the next year, we got two cases over the course of the next year from Bridgeford, all because of a thank you letter.
Man, that had to have been like a super morale booster in such a terrible situation.
It really was. And I'd mentioned early on that I've got this summer sausage. But at the time, we were sitting down and having lasagna. Marion had brought in some lasagna.
Freeze-dried?
I'm not sure exactly how she brought it in, but she cooked it there at our very first camp.
Yeah.
This was after
the flood?
As soon as we realized we were trapped.
Okay. So it's
While we were waiting for the rain to stop, the flooding to stop coming up, we sat down in the living room and we had a meal. And I'd mentioned, you know, I've got this, but it was hours later when everybody's so hungry and just really beaten down. And I said, oh, by the way, I've still got this summer sausage. Yeah, everybody's faces just lit up, and it was a huge morale boost. I think from a morale standpoint, it probably is what carried us through.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we really did great amongst each other, but you know that little bit of extra food just kind of gives you that extra drive to
not just any food. I mean, this is good protein rich, fat rich, flavor rich. I mean, right on. That's great. Well, Trey, thank you for your time.
My pleasure.
We got to spend a full hour sometime.
Sure. Yeah. More than happy to.
Yeah.
Anytime.
All right. Happy capers.
Oh, thanks. You too.
Thank you, Trey. That was cool. And next up, I had to wait to get my friend Ellie to talk to me. She said, let me have a few more beers. Let me have a few more beers. And every time I came over, that was what I heard. But finally, she was cool with it. And as you're about to hear, she's an old caving friend from way back. She and I used to go a lot with this. You'll hear it. Ellie Wind of the Central Indiana Grotto.
So, Ellie, it's been a while since you've been caving.
It has, unfortunately.
And we used to be part of, this was 10 years ago now. Can you believe it was that long ago? You were the core group.
It was. It was a decade ago.
It was the core. It was you and me and Paul Uglum.
Yes.
And but he didn't make all of them. And there was also Jesse Hauser, Jenna, and who else?
Sometimes Adam Oakley.
Sometimes Adam, you're right, sometimes Adam Oakley, but not all the time.
Not often.
Not often, but every once in a while. And we did. Did you do the Capers trip in 2012 where we did the through trip in Donahue?
I think so,
was that the Friday?
That
it was Friday of Capers 2012.
Yes, and then I think we did Buddha Christian the next day.
Buddha the next day.
And I had problems.
What were the problems?
Well,
it was climbing out.
Yes, it was climbing out, and honestly, it should have been rigged. It's a little 15 or 20 foot
no,
thing.
No, it should have been rigged. It was, there was a whole thing with that.
But there were a few people who free climbed out just fine, and I couldn't. I could not.
So I had done Buddha. I did Buddha that year, and I did Buddha the year before.
Okay.
I think I did Buddha the year before.
It was my first time in Buddha.
But both times we did the feet on one side, butt on the other side, chimney across that canyon.
Yeah.
Which is not the way you're supposed to do it.
That is not the right way to do it.
No, no. But each time it was like, this is how you do it.
Yep.
Now you just took people at their word because I was new to caving at that time.
I was as well. I think this was my first capers. It was really some of my first like wild vertical even.
It only became vertical because you couldn't get out and a couple other people couldn't get out or couldn't get across.
Well, and there were some people behind me that, you know, were trapped behind me. It's kind of single file back there.
Yeah. And Buddha Cave is a cave owned by the Indiana Karst Conservancy.
Yes.
It's a great cave. One of the most gorgeous caves in Indiana. Now, you've been through since then, right? Like to the other side?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And again, with vertical.
With vertical.
Because we did it the way you're supposed to do it. Yes. Yes. You're supposed to rig it. It's not that far, but it's just.
What is it? 30 foot drop from the top?
Yeah.
You can make it across to the other side, and then you can do a crawl slash climb down.
Yes.
But it's not recommended.
And I think my problem was that I had worn a wetsuit and then waited in that little crawlway and just gotten so cold. Yeah. That I, you know, in the wetsuit, just sitting there, not moving, and I just couldn't quite make it up.
Yeah.
I don't know. But anyways, they rigged it, got me some gear. I climbed out. It was all okay.
Yeah.
But it was a little, it was just my first experience with.
Just a few weeks prior to that, was that your first vertical trip when we went down to Red River Gorge? You remember
yes.
that? It was you and me. I picked you up. It was dark when I, it was summertime, and it was dark when I picked you up, and it was dark
it
when
was
I dropped
dark,
you off.
Yes.
Because we drove from Indianapolis down to Red River Gorge, and we did Frog's Head.
We did Frog's, well, we did a little 50-foot
warm-up,
and then we did Frog's Head, which is
like
over 200.
Almost or over, right around 200.
Right around 200.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was great. But
it was cool.
I was not.
We had Miguel's pizza.
We did.
But
delicious.
That was quite the introduction to vertical.
It was. And then, you know, going straight to, I don't think I had done vertical in a cave until, you know, Buddha, when I couldn't climb out. So
did you were you with me at Green Eye?
With Jenna and.
What was your first vertical cave? I mean, other than Buddha.
Oh, Lord.
Because that was like your first time putting on the gear to climb out of a cave.
Out of an actual cave, yes. My first true vertical cave, I think, was Freeman Pit, which is right about 100
Okay, so,
feet,
yeah.
So, classic There's, Indiana pit.
Yeah. Around 100 feet.
Yeah. But I've also done Green Eye.
That was my first vertical cave. Green Eye 1.
Green Eye's beautiful.
Not Green Eye 2. I haven't been down to see the bike.
I have not seen Green Eye 2.
There's a bicycle at the bottom of it.
Is there really?
Yeah, there's a bicycle. There's like an old Schwinn at the bottom of Green Eye 2.
Is it the same owners, the new owners from like a few years ago?
No, the new owners of Green Eye 1, they're not cave friendly anymore.
Yeah.
Green Eye 2 is across the road.
I think we were on the last trip to Green Eye, really.
Yeah, where we met the guy.
Where we met the new guy.
And he seemed okay, but then a few weeks later, we were like, I guess he's not letting cavers.
Well, actually, that day, I had the skeevies from him because he said he had had a birthday recently, and he went to sit by the entrance to the pit, drank some beers, crushed the cans, and threw them down in the pit. And I specifically remember bringing up some beer cans, and when we talked to him afterwards, he said, oh yeah, that was me. And so I'm really not hopeful for the condition of that pit in the future.
You just gotta keep talking to him,
yeah.
I guess. He's a really young guy, which is unfortunate for us because it's like he's gonna own it for a long time, potentially.
Long time. And it's a family thing, too. It's a family farm sort of.
Is that the situation?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
And so I, you know, even if he doesn't own it, it's in the family, and I think it's.
So what I think is really cool is, like, me, in the years since we were the core, I have, you know, gotten remarried and had started a family, and so I'm not caving as much, but I'm still doing this podcast. But you've been caving like crazy, which is awesome to see. At least from my perspective,
yeah.
I think compared to me, you've been caving like crazy.
I got into
you've
some projects caving,
Joe
a little
with
bit,
Ron and with that crew.
Yes, and it's been a trip. It's been a learning experience.
Yeah.
And at this point, I haven't caved in about a year.
Well, there's a lot of reasons why a lot of people
a lot
haven't
of,
caved.
You know, current events.
Yeah.
Going on.
There's a number of things
and stuff, and. Yeah, I just haven't caved. I'm not going to say that that's exactly the reason why, but my last major cave trip was a through trip to Rumbling Falls.
George!
Through Rumbling. Hey, George! and that one, you know, I had a couple of little.
You went to Rumble. Did you go to the Rumble Room?
I did.
The big one. The
I
big
did
room.
The through trip, yeah.
Okay,
I,
so
I
you,
did the through trip.
You
so
had to.
The
God.
New through trip that's been.
How cool was that?
It was, you know, I. I've never seen such big breakdown. I've never seen such exhausting breakdown. My God, I couldn't. You know, Wayne's Cave is about what we have comparable to that. It kicked my ass. But on the way out, it was the breeziest. I couldn't hear anything. It was just so
it was
breezy.
So, really?
Yes. The route that they had blasted to get that new entrance, exit, whatever you call it. It was just blowing air. I couldn't believe it. I could hardly hear anything. I mean, and it was just glorious. It was so refreshing to come out to that and, you know, go my last few 100 feet or whatever through the breeze there. And it was a long trip, but it was so much fun. It really was.
How long was that trip? How long were you underground?
I think we were underground for 12 hours.
Okay, but that's pretty good.
We're a slow group. Too. Yeah. I think you can do it in much shorter time than that.
Yeah, but why? Just take your time.
We're a fun crew, and we like to take our time and stop. And
yeah, understood.
12 to 14 hours, I think we were under.
Yeah, so. That's the way to do it, I guess.
Yeah.
If you're with that kind of group.
Yeah.
Well, what about Indiana? You've been doing your fair share of stuff in Indiana, too, right?
I've done some stuff, yeah. Again, it's been a while. But I've done some Binkley stuff.
Okay, yeah.
Binkley Pit, I think, is what I'm most proud of as far as survey goes.
Yeah.
So I helped. I actually sketched a portion of that cave. But I've done some work in Studebaker and
that's a big
Lucas
project in Indiana.
Yeah.
That's super cool.
Studebaker is just such an accommodating. I love that cave.
A good group of people doing it, too. Just a fun group of
everyone
folks.
Everyone is fun. It is just, it's a great time every time. There's no pressure, you know. It's not go, 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 but we get done, and
They've done a lot in there.
They've done a lot. It's one of the biggest projects, I think. And, you know, there's two different routes you can take, and one of them sort of dead-ended, but it's really pretty. It's got some good formation as far as Indiana goes.
Yeah,
it's got some good columns, stalactites.
There's so much cave under that whole
I think
valley.
From being a 40 maybe 50 foot pit that just went to nowhere and to, you know, quite a few thousand feet.
Okay, so all right. I mean, I don't know how much they want me to air about this project, but I mean, everybody knows about this. Everybody in Indiana knows about this project now.
I think
so. This was a 50 some foot pit, whatever, that was just a pit for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know why they wanted to try to push it? Was there air coming up from the floor or something?
There
like
was
that?
Air coming up from the floor. I wasn't around for the initial the excavation of the pit,
right? It's been going on for years,
since 2012.
Yeah,
I don't know, some earlier than that maybe.
Yeah, they've been working on it.
They've been digging out the floor a lot, and that's probably quite a few tens of feet further down that they dug out from the bottom of the pit. And it was just moving air, so they decided to keep cracking away at it.
And they got quite a bit of cave now.
They got quite a bit of cave. I think in total over a mile.
Really? At this point?
It's in the thousands. It might be only over 4,000.
I want to say the last thing I heard was like 3 or 4 somewhere in there. But nothing to sneeze at.
Certainly not. Especially considering what it used to be.
Yeah.
And they eventually did crack open to a bathtub. And you could push it two directions. And they pushed it one way first. And found all those beautiful virgin formations and virgin borehole, and
do we know anything, because this is in an area where there's all kinds of known caves. Do we know if it gets anywhere near? We do know that it gets somewhere near a potentially known cave.
Yes, but we don't want
to. We don't need to talk about that.
We don't need to talk about that cave.
But that's very exciting.
It is close.
Yeah.
It's close.
It's a significant cave, and it's right next to it. And all right.
It's ongoing.
We can leave it at that.
Yes, we'll leave it at that. We're not gonna touch that.
What are you doing this weekend?
This weekend, I am having fun.
Is that, just cave or fun?
Yes. Tomorrow, I'm going to get my feet wet again. Well, not literally, because it's a dry cave.
Right.
But,
okay. Where?
I'm going to Blue River Run Cave.
Okay. Wait, is that on state land?
It is.
Okay, it's one of the permit caves.
It's right across the road from Wyandotte, I believe.
Woo!
And I've never seen it, and I haven't been caving in a year, so I'm just going to kind of get back into it and
that's
see
exciting.
Some pretties, and
yeah.
I guess it's got some formations, and I'm gonna just have some good old fun.
What's still on your list to do?
Oh gosh!
I mean, either in the world or in Indiana or whatever. I mean, what would you say would be a good ultimate goal in your caving life, or have you even thought about that?
So there's actually a kind of a trip with some of us, some of the Indiana folks, where they're wanting to go to Ferns this fall, later this fall.
Okay, all right.
And
you gonna do surprise?
I gotta train for this.
Yeah?
I gotta train for this.
Okay.
I'm gonna practice, you know, do some rope work in the backyard and all that. So we'll see. But it's you know, it's a big pit cave, so down in Alabama. That Ferns cave.
It's we'll a big damn deal.
Yeah, it's a big damn deal. Ellison's is probably my next next bucket list.
Haven't been in there yet.
I have not even been inside that.
Because you're with the crew who did that crossover trip, I don't know, a number of years ago.
I was not with
them. You were not with them, but you are associated with them.
I am associated with them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was not on that.
So for you to go back there probably wouldn't be too difficult, but to work yourself up to it will be a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to take some training.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Have fun this weekend.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You have fun too.
I'm planning on it.
Oh, Ellie, I hope we can go caving again soon. That'd be great. Okay, last but certainly not least, Phil Heverin of the Louisville Grotto. And at this point, I was getting to where I probably shouldn't have a microphone in front of me, which I'm sure you'll hear.
What's your cave?
My cave? I don't have a single cave.
Okay, but if you could go to one, and it was the only one you could ever go to again, what would it be? You can say Mammoth.
Yeah.
You can say Rottweil.
Mammoth's cheating because you can just do something different.
Well, there you go.
I'd probably go back to one of my favorite caves, Pine Hill Cave.
Pine Hill Cave, dude. Yeah, I've done Skylight to Hurricane.
Yeah. So we went when I went there the first time. We found Skylight. We couldn't find Hurricane.
Oh yeah.
And I've been back there twice, and we still haven't found Hurricane.
Yeah.
The first time we had some old map that we like printed off the internet or something. We were more spelunkers than cavers at the time.
Ah, but you still did Skylight?
We found it, yeah. We were in the cave like 14 hours.
Oh, you went to it, but you didn't climb it or rappel?
No, we didn't climb it. Okay. No. We found it from horizontal, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's a great cave though, man.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Like, I loved it. I was just amazed when I was in there. We did that big through trip.
Yeah. So did you all drop in and then go out horizontal entrance?
We had the option to do that. No, we were on a crew that dropped in Skylight. Is it Skylight?
There's Skylight Dome and
Skylight
Hurricane
Dome
Pit.
And Hurricane Pit. Yeah, we went in Skylight, went out Hurricane.
Oh,
climbed
okay.
out Hurricane Pit.
Cool.
It was a great trip.
Is that a free climb?
No, we were on rope. But it could have been.
Yeah.
Like, it's like
heard that it would be a free climbable, but like pretty hard. But I still I don't know.
It's a thing where if you fell, it would mess you up pretty bad. So we were on rope when we climbed out. But yeah, that was great. And then, you know, we camped at GSP that weekend. But yeah, so I saw that one. I saw Sinks of the Roundstone that weekend. Have you been there?
No, I've not.
No?
So I've only been that. Pine Hill is the only cave I've really done in that area. So.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So Pine Hill is your cave.
I can't really say that I have a cave, though. It's
I know, okay, but
out there.
Yeah. If it's the one,
yeah,
then it'll be that one.
I mean, I went to some amazing caves in Vietnam.
You lived in Vietnam for a little while.
Yeah, for a couple months, yeah.
Did you see Song Dong, how do you say it?
Song Dong Cave.
Okay.
I might be pronouncing it wrong, but
that's the one you could fly a jumbo jet through.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
So I did do a cave expedition there that was 3 days, 2 nights and 3 days.
Wow.
The first day was almost entirely hiking through the jungle to get to the area where the caves were. And then we explored 3 caves where basically a mountain had collapsed in on itself. Like the entire mountain was basically a cave.
Yeah.
And it collapsed in on itself. And then there was caves around the rim now. And then, so we went through one cave and then we went to where the mountain had collapsed in, and it was basically a giant field of breakdown
that
jungle grew on top of. And it was like the hardest hiking I've
just
ever done.
Just this mega karst out in the freaking Vietnamese wilderness.
I mean, it might have been like 1,000 feet around, but it took us forever to go across it because you couldn't see the rock because it was jungle stuff growing on top of it, but it was just breakdown. There was like no soil.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah. And then we got to the other side and we did another cave, came back out of that one and then went in another one. and then came out the other side of that and hiked back up and hiked out.
Oh, my God. How did you end up there?
I did, like, a backpacking vagabond lifestyle for about 2.5 years.
Okay, which took you where? I mean, there, but where else?
I flew out of the U.S. to Australia.
Okay.
I lived in Australia for about a year.
Wow.
And then after that, I lived in New Zealand for about 15 months.
Everything wants to kill you in Australia.
Yes.
So
mostly the kangaroos.
What was that? Oh, okay. They want to box you?
No, they'll just jump in front of your car.
Oh, okay. All right.
They're the most dangerous animal, like, by far.
Oh, my God. Really?
Yeah.
Did you run into any jacked alpha male?
I saw two of them get in a boxing match in the wild. That was awesome. I ran over a couple when I was working there. So I was doing a thing where I'd go somewhere and work for like 4 or 5 months, save up money, and then I'd travel for like a month. And then I'd stop in a different town and do it again.
Did you do any caving there?
Not in Australia. I did in New Zealand.
Okay. So, yeah. Oh, my God. Plenty of limestone there.
Yeah. One of the New Zealand caves... completely wild. I found it on some like Reddit thread. I'm not going to try to pronounce the name because there's a big long Maori word. And it was in some park, and we drove up and found it, went in, and saw the glowworms that.
I was going to ask.
It was amazing, man. Amazing. So I didn't do any sort of super hardcore push because it was just me and an Estonian girl that I'd met at a hostel.
Okay.
Just had to travel with me for like 2 weeks.
Okay.
And so we were driving around and just doing the backpacking thing, sleeping out of the car, or setting up a tent somewhere. And we stopped at this cave and she sat out there and I said, I'm going in. And came back out and like an hour later. When I found the room where it had all, it looked like I was staring at a starry night on the wall.
Oh, God, I can't, darkness. I can, every it's time insane, I imagine man. It, it's like.
Beautiful. The pictures and stuff, you know, you get to look up the videos and they're all pretty heavily edited, but, you know, it doesn't do it justice.
Yeah, yeah.
It's different when you're there.
Okay, so where are you from originally?
Louisville.
You're from Louisville, so you're back home.
Yeah.
Are you a project caver? You like. Do the exploration thing, or do you recreational cave?
More casual.
Yeah, okay, that's like me.
So, I have my name on one map, Buckner Cave.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
That's my cave, man.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, not Buckner. I mean, sorry, not Bucket. Bucket Cave.
Bucket Cave.
Bucket Cave, sorry. Bucket Cave at Lone Star Reserve.
Okay.
Buckner, yeah.
How long is that cave? So
it's not very long, but it is tough. Like,
okay.
We were belly crawling, trying to shoot, and... I was just basically a mule. I was running up tape measures and stuff to people, and you know, it's a long, tight crawl, and you're doing it over a crack with a drop that's not big enough to get down, but eventually, at some point, it's big enough to climb down.
Yeah.
And then you climb down, and then there's a lot more cave down there. And
yeah.
You get to crawl around more, and it's a lot more open in the bottom level. But still wasn't an easy day.
Yeah.
I tried to go back there recently. So when I did that survey was maybe 8 years ago. So I came back more recently, and I've gained some weight since then. Not a ton, but it made it a lot harder.
Yeah, well,
a whole lot
so harder. It's that kind of cave. It's like where you got to be a certain size. You got to be a certain fitness level. It's one of those things. And as I understand it, there's a number of caves on that property that are like that.
Mm.
Yeah.
So they recently gated that cave.
Oh, did they?
Because of how challenging it is. They just don't want, like, people coming on the property and randomly going in.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And that's understandable.
Yeah.
That's cool, man. What are you going to do this weekend up here in Indiana?
I was looking at the board over there. I was thinking Blue River Run Cave tomorrow.
There you go. That's a good idea.
If that works out. And then Ted's Dig Sunday.
Yeah, yeah, classic.
I don't make either of the sign-ups for those. My backup for either of those will be to go to Langdon's, which they're doing both days.
Okay, yeah. So, I'm going to Langdon's tomorrow.
See, I thought Langdon's was a vertical cave. When I looked at the map, it looked like there was pits and stuff.
No, there are, but you don't have to do them.
Okay.
I guess they're in the back. I don't know. What other Indiana caving have you done? I mean, you're right here, right on the border.
I mean, I've done Buckner. I did an
you did Buckner.
At Buckner.
Okay.
A few years back. And then I've been to, I believe it was in Spring Mill State Park. We went in one one entrance, and we came out of another entrance that we were, like, swimming out of.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we were doing, do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
So we're swimming out of this entrance, and there's, like, normal people, like a normal family out there, and we're, like, their kids are playing in the water. Like,
and
they're
then
having a picnic.
Here comes this dude
here
coming
comes,
out of
like,
a hole in the
six people, like,
hill.
Swimming out of a hole in the hill, and the kids are playing in the stream that the water's flowing out of, okay? They're all just, like, dumbfounded.
And you got your gear on. You got your helmet. Oh, my God, here comes an explorer who came out of the freaking ground. Yeah. Awesome. That'd be a trip for them.
That was, like, a weird one to explain to them, you know, while they're having their random picnic. And
well, enjoy your weekend.
Hey, you too, man.
Thanks.
Appreciate it.
Phil, great time. Thank you, man. Hope we can hang out again soon. All right, there you have it, the Caving Podcast. And I do know who we're going to be talking with next month, a talk on paleoclimatology with Matthew Lochneet of the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. This was such a fascinating conversation, and I cannot wait for you to hear it. It'll be out October the 1st. And thanks again to our sponsor, El Spelio. Congratulations again to Lane Roberts, tour guide at Caverns of Sonora in Texas. She is the first recipient of my El Spelio Lunatic. She's going to give it a try down in Mexico. And if you want to get on the list for that, you can email me at alpineproductions@gmail.com. And, of course, if you want to upgrade your light situation, get serious about it, go to elspelio.com and pick up a Lunatic of your own or any other light. And be sure to use the promo code podcast when you do that to save $20. And thanks to our past sponsors, Swago. Visit swagogear.com, pick up a pack. And, of course, Organic Robot Designs. Hit up the brick-and-mortar store in Greenfield, Indiana, or visit organicrobotdesigns.com. If you're in a grotto and you want to get some T-shirts made, Charlie's your guy. All right, I think that's everything. I think I've covered all the bases. Thank you for listening. I'm Matt Pelser at the Central Indiana Grotto, and until next time, kill nothing but time.